Hi everyone, welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Glad to have you back with us, or if you're new, just joining us for the first time, we're glad to have you as well. If you're joining us live, this is the awesome part of this. I just want you to be able to share this. Well, of course, if you're watching and it's recorded too, share it as well. But bring your friends along. We're going to talk about eclectic homeschooling tonight, and I'll talk a little bit about that as I introduce our guest and just what we're talking about this month is different homeschooling approaches, methodologies, so that you get a better understanding of what is there out there and what choices do I have. And that's what the awesome part of eclectic homeschooling is as Julia is going to teach us, is that it's a mix of everything and you take the best and you leave the rest. Welcome, Julia. I'm glad that you are with us tonight, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us.
Thank you.
Yeah, so is your head spinning with homeschooling lingo, Charlotte Mason, classical, unschooling, traditional, unit studies? Are you trying to pick and choose, but you just don't know what best fits your family? Or do you tend to lean to thinking outside the box, or do you feel stuck in the box without any other option? Here's the truth. One style doesn't fit all. Just as we tell our parents with special needs kids, there isn't one based on your child's diagnoses. Depending on your child's age, grade, learning challenges, or interests, you can a la carte with a purpose. In this session tonight, Julia is going to share with us, based on what she's done in teaching her own children and through designing the BiblioPlan curriculum, that it's possible to thoughtfully pick and choose a little bit of this, a little bit of that with success. So we're so glad to have you here tonight, Julia. And I also want to let our audience know that Julia would like to get your questions, but we're going to hold them to the end, and we're going to do a Q&A session at the end. So make sure that as she's talking and bringing up things, if you have a question, feel free to throw them in the feed. We'll kind of go through them, but we are going to hold them till the end of her presentation and fit those in. So thanks again, Julia, for joining us. And as we get started, you know, I always ask my guests, tell us a little bit about you, because that always plays into the factor of, you know, what you talk about and why you talk about it, and really how you've learned to do what you do.
Well, I'm really glad to be here. I'm from Virginia, so this is 9 o'clock late for me. So yes. Yeah, I'm not going to fall asleep. I actually graduated with a nursing degree, a little practical nursing degree. And I loved nursing. I loved my patients, but I was not really good with the paperwork.
Oh.
I hated all things that have to do with paper and writing, because I'm left-handed and I have the worst handwriting in the world. So I got out of nursing after a year of going for my RN. Hmm. And I changed directions. My mom was a teacher, and I decided I was going to follow in her footsteps. So I got my education degree, and mm-hmm. I absolutely loved it. I love teaching. I love kids. I just really enjoyed it. But I'm a renegade. I don't follow very well books. I kind of always think outside the box. Mm-hmm. And so as a teacher, I was always, you know, pressing up against, I don't want to use this curriculum. I want to try something different.
Uh-huh.
I try to teach from a teacher's guide. It was boring to me.
Yeah.
So when I was teaching school, and I taught for a number of years, I rarely ever cracked open the teacher's guide. I just winged it. I went with my passions and my heart.
Right.
And it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, but it required a lot more planning, because,
yes,
you know, if you're winging it, you've got to think through more mm-hmm. than just reading what someone else is telling me how to do it.
Yeah.
But my students benefited. It was better for them.
Right.
I taught school for quite a number of years, and then I decided to try. I tried to take part in a missions program. So I went for 9 months, and I spent time in Belize, Central America.
Wow.
And that was a pretty profound experience for me. Mm. When I came back, I decided that I wanted to go into missions. And I kind of thought, well, I'd like to get my master's in education, and then I could go and teach in a school overseas or you know, be a principal or do something like that.
Right.
So I was single at the time, and so it was kind of like the, you know, everything was open for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I started seminary, and the very first class that I took was Old Testament.
Okay.
And I thought, this is going to be really boring because I've been in church all my life, and what else are they going to tell me about Old Testament that I haven't already learned? That class was life-changing for me.
Mm.
The professor was phenomenal, and he taught scripture in a way that nobody had ever taught before to me, and it was just life-changing. I ended up taking every single class that I could possibly take that he offered. I ended up with a master's in Old Testament, pastoral ministries, and counseling, which was very different from Christian education. I never.
Right, exactly. A little tangent there.
Class there. I didn't actually know what I was going to do with my degree because while I was in seminary, I actually got married. And so that kind of upended my, I'm going single to the mission field kind of thing. So by the time I had graduated and was married, it was kind of like, why did I do this? And that question kind of hung over me for a couple years. So anyway.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about your family then.
Well, I have an awesome husband. He loves the Lord. He loves his family in that order. He's an awesome singer. He plays a guitar. He's just very talented. We have five children. We have four boys and a girl. Our two oldest are biological, and they are both out of the house, although I do get to see them a lot, so it's not too bad. Our three youngers, we call them our littles. They're all three adopted. We adopted them from Ukraine, three different separate adoptions.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The oldest, the boys are both 16. They're 4 months apart. They're four weeks apart.
Ah.
And our little girl is 9. So then my husband and I together, we actually co-write a history literature curriculum called the Biblio Plan.
So how did that get started?
So when my two older sons were starting school, when my oldest was going into school, we put him in Christian school because I was an educator. And I was not going to homeschool. I just was not. I was very against it. Really? There wasn't a lot of people in my world at that point that were homeschooling. There were a few, but there was, you know, this was my oldest is 26. So this was a while back.
Yeah.
And I had the mantra of children need to be socialized was a very, very big deal. And it was a big deal to me. And so I put them in a pop Christian school, but the Christian school that I put them in was very strict, was very much put your feet on the floor and fold your hands in front of your lap and you know, very not creative, everything that goes against me. As soon as we had him there, I hated it, but he was so social and he fell in love with all the kids in his class and all these friends, and so we didn't want to pull him out.
Right.
And we hung out with both boys there for a while, and then he hit the wall in about fourth grade. He got a teacher that was super mean, super strict, and he just started crying every day. And after about the fourth week of school, I asked him, I said, do you want mommy to homeschool you? And I just kind of threw that out rhetorically, thinking that he was going to say no way. He started crying and he said, please, please, mommy, homeschool me. And so that kind of was like, okay. So we pulled him out. And so we got jumped right into the deep end of homeschooling because we didn't think it through. It was just like, we just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next thing you know, I've got to homeschool these peoples that I have not planned on. I didn't know what curriculum was out there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you know, it was just a very shocking thing. So at first we stuck with what the school had. I brought home their books and I started out with that. And that lasted for all of a matter of a couple weeks. Honestly, I just am like, I'm just a renegade. And so
that's probably what a lot of people did with COVID too. It's kind of the same scenario.
You get it. And you're like, I think I'm going to go differently because this isn't, I don't really like this. And
right.
So, I started looking at different things. And as time went on over the next year, I went with just a little bit of this and a little bit of that, exchanging. And I stumbled during that period upon a little guide that lined up reading history with reading quality literature books, living books. And it was called Biblioplan, which is Latin for book plan.
Oh.
It meant starting in ancient history, which with my seminary degree, I was like, oh, this is like so cool, because now we're watching Bible history and ancient history going together, which is what I was trained in. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden I'm doing it with my kids, and it was just a really cool God thing. We watched the God story unfold, and we just kept at it. A few years later, I was asked to teach at our local co-op. And so I took that little guide in. I started using it in my class. And it just so happened that the owner who owned that guide had a child in my class. And being the kind of person that I am, I had taken that guide and I had was changing it. Ripping the scope and sequence, and I didn't like this, and I was doing all kinds of stuff to her guide. And her little boy was coming home with maps and question pages and all kinds of stuff that wasn't part of the curriculum, but that she's looking at this going, I really like what you're doing. She was from Texas, and so she had this awesome Texas accent, and she said, hey, can we partner? And so that kind of got us going, and I started writing for her, and then we started partnering together, and then eventually we ended up buying the company from her. So that's kind of how all of that happened. So here we are.
That's really cool. So, I mean, so you really were crafting and creating curriculum before you even thought you were making curriculum.
That's exactly right.
So you're here tonight to help other moms do the exact same thing, and I'm so excited for you to share. So where do you even start when you start thinking about, you know, how do we do this?
So I think you need to start with just understanding what is out there, and
right.
Most of what's out there fall under certain philosophies of homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
There's the traditional philosophy, there's unit studies, there's classical Charlotte Mason, and then there's unschooling, free spirit. Those are kinds of words that you're going to hear all the time.
Right.
And so traditional is, if you're coming out of public school, that's going to be what your kids were doing for the most part.
Yeah.
It's what most of us are familiar with. It's, you read the text, you answer the questions, you memorize facts, you take tests.
Yeah.
The vast majority of curriculum follow traditional method. If you went to public school or a traditional Christian school, chances are you use traditional curriculum.
Right.
Unit studies are also pretty familiar. And again, if they came out of public school, if you've come out of public school, or if you're using traditional curriculum, a lot of times they have built-in unit studies, or unit studies is just a part of it.
Right.
So unit studies, caught you pick a certain subject and you zoom in on it. We do this for science when we study a unit on mammals, or we do this for history when we do a unit on pilgrims or the Egyptians. If schools stray from traditional, it is usually in the direction of you doing unit studies. Classical is something that popped up right before I started homeschooling, and it was pretty much started with a book called The Well-Trained Mind by Susan Wise Bauer.
Yes, I remember reading that.
Is on teaching children to think critically. During the elementary years, children learn facts and memorize them. In the middle school, children learn to think logically based on those facts, and then in high school, they formulate what they believe, and then are able to express their beliefs in speaking and writing. Classical education, history is its guiding tool. So with literature books being, they kind of go together.
Right.
And it's kind of a living book kind of idea. History is taught in order from ancients to modern. And literature and the other subjects, science, math, languages are all tied into it. And then classical education is considered is kind of very language focused. So that's kind of your classical approach. Charlotte Mason wasn't really a keyword when my oldest were going through. So I didn't ever even hear it, understand it.
Yeah,
until
we had a whole hour last week where we did Charlotte Mason. So
it's newer. But it's another style of learning that is based around doing rather than just sitting and listening. The emphasis is on reading living books, study and history in order. Both of those are actually like classical.
So
two of them kind of go together in some ways. Charlotte Mason believes in short lessons, and learning to write through narration and dictation. They do a lot of music study, nature study, other hands-on learning. It's very child-focused. So it's a great option. And then there's the unschooling, and people think you can't, unschooling is like, that's not schooling. Okay. But unschooling is actually a type of homeschooling.
Yes. We spent a whole hour on that too, a couple weeks ago. So yes, if you want more, I interviewed, Dr. Peter Gray from that wrote Free to Learn, fascinating interview. So definitely go back and watch that if you want to learn more about unschooling.
Its fundamental drive is very student-led, or child-focused, as opposed to teacher or parent-led. So if the child is interested in rockets, then they're encouraged to study and learn everything they can about rockets. And then you as a mom are coming alongside, and you are creating math lessons and writing lessons and history lessons that all go in with that rocket focus, so that you're just pulling it all together for that child. So those are kind of the five basic types of philosophies that most of the curriculum fall under, one or the other of those.
Right, but it tends to be that I think the longer you homeschool, you kind of start pulling from every single one, you know, and yet it seems so confusing because am I covering everything? You know, am I doing it right? You have a lot of trepidations about, you know, doing that, because you think, well, if I'm not following a plan, I'm not doing it right. And so what do you have to share about that?
It is okay to, let me start by saying I'm a soup maker. I've turned into a soup maker. And I'm the kind of soup maker, like a curriculum maker, which is like, I wing it. I don't follow recipes. I tend to think what would be good here. So I throw in a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And my attitude is, if you add enough spices, you can make really tasty soup out of a bunch of bits and pieces that you can find.
Mm-hmm.
So back during the Depression, homeless people would create community stews, and they were called mulligan stews. And they made them with whatever they had on hand. So the first mulligan stew is mentioned in an article in 1900 from Portland, England. And in the article, it talks about five or six hobos joined together. They're going to make a mulligan stew. One of them builds a fire and rustles up a can. Another has to procure the meat. Another one finds the potatoes. One fella pledges himself to obtain bread, and still another has to furnish onion, salt, and pepper. If a chicken can be stolen, so much the better. This is all in the article. The whole outfit is placed in the can and boiled until it is done. So they've made a mulligan stew with a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Huh. That sounds a bit like eclectic homeschooling. So how do we translate that then into what we're doing with teaching our kids?
In my opinion, no one philosophy can cover all the bases for all of our kids.
Yeah,
boxes, when we
so
buy
true.
A curriculum out of a box, and you know, they're appealing. They're super easy. You know, you can pick your child grade. You can write a check, and boom, you have everything you need for that entire year. You're done. You can just say, I'm going to pick this company's curriculum. I'm going to get their second grade material, and you just get that box, and you're done. Those boxes are nice. They contain everything you need for the year. They save time. They're trusted and true. They appeal to your philosophy for the most part, because you're not usually going to buy a box that doesn't appeal to some kind of philosophy.
Right.
They're usually thorough, and they usually cover everything that you need. And the vast majority of items in the box are going to line up with your worldview. So that, that is following a box. But what happens is, what many people come to realize is that not all the items in that box are going to meet your child's needs.
Exactly.
One size does not always fit all. There are parts in that box that you don't like,
right,
your kids don't like, and yet you've spent money and you're stuck with it, and you feel guilty using it, not using
it. Oh, yes.
If the box contains only traditional material, then your child who loves to move and experiment and get their hands messy is going to die of boredom.
Yes.
If the box contains only literature books, and focuses on language and higher level thinking, then your child who loves unit studies is going to drown.
Yeah.
If that box contains only unit studies, then your child who loves to read and think critically and wants to see things line up chronologically is going to be miserable.
Yeah.
If there isn't a box at all, but instead of free for all, then your child who loves order and accountability is going to feel lost. So you get where I'm going.
Yes, exactly.
If you want to be the most effective teacher for your children, you need to pick and choose based on your children. Their needs, their age, their individual learning styles, their abilities, their strengths, their weaknesses. And you need to pick and choose based on your philosophy, your beliefs, your passion, your Christian worldview, and what you want to teach. What is going to excite you? And sometimes that means that if you buy the box, it's perfect. It meets all your needs. And sometimes that means that the box is not. And sometimes, well, here's what I discovered. When I started out and held in my hands the traditional Christian curriculum that my children did in the Christian school, when I started picking and choosing, I didn't throw it all out.
Yeah, exactly.
I kept pieces of it because traditional worked perfect in spelling and reading comprehension for my kids.
Yeah.
So I kept that.
That makes sense.
I didn't keep the math in that curriculum, but I did choose another math that also leaned towards traditional. I threw out the reading program from that curriculum because my sons were great readers. And instead, I went with BiblioPlan because it included classical history, geography, literature, and writing.
Right.
I threw out the science and went with a unit study focused science. And we did a combination of Charlotte Mason and classical for writing. And we unschooled.
Yeah.
Following our hearts and passions.
Yeah. So do you have any tips and just like basic advice as parents are like approaching this, as you know, how do I, you know, step by step, what do I need to do and to think through this and to maybe cover all my bases?
The very first thing you need to do is you need to find out what your state requires. I mean,
people kind of
forget that sometimes and they jump into homeschool and they end up missing some pretty key points. Every state has requirements that you need to look for. You need to look at what is your state required that you do and that you have to teach. I'm in Virginia and it's pretty easy. If you have a college degree, you don't have to go through any hoops except you have to get, you have to do testing at the end of the year to prove that your child has advanced. Other than that, we're pretty easy. But some of the states are pretty intense. You're in Texas?
In Texas, nothing. We don't have to report anything. We just have five basic subjects that we have to teach, but nobody checks in on you. So, you know, it's kind of loosey-goosey. But we do have a place on our website where you can check your state law. So so you can go there. And also, we also have reporting requirements for every state that requires it, too. I've got a blog, and I can link those into this broadcast
helpful.
As well, because it is helpful. You know, a lot of people go online and they're like, oh, this is what I do to homeschool, this is the state laws, or these are the laws, and then they realize this person that answered, you know, on social media lives in a different state and it's not their law at all. So definitely listen to Julia, check out
your state
before you start.
Your state. Okay, and then the next thing you know is you have to think about your children. What grade are they in? If they are itty bitties, then your choices are vastly different than they're in high, if they're in high school. Are they coming from a school where they were behind? Or are they just starting out? Do you have kids who love to read and love to learn and can sit and focus for hours? They could handle traditional classical. If they don't love to read and they can't sit for hours, then both of those might just be a little bit not the best option.
Right, exactly.
Do you have kids who are movers and shakers and learning needs to be hands-on and quick and multi-sensory? Those are your Charlotte Mason unit study and unschoolers. Do you have kids who have learning struggles? Do you have kids who are auditory learners, visual learners, kinesthetic? Actually, in our curriculum BiblioPlan, we have a whole part of our website where we give parents tips for how to use our material.
That's awesome.
If you have kids with all of those issues, so that you can take the material and adapt it for all of your kids' special needs. For gifted, we have a whole part of our website showing you how you can take this material and make it more advanced or slow it down for either your gift or your struggling learners.
I just wanted to share your website here. I know I'm going to share it at the end too, but it's biblioplan.net if
.net,
you're
that's
thinking.
right.
And also, if you're asking questions or you have a question, make sure you put them in the feed, because we're going to get to those at the end after Julie is done sharing all of her great advice. So she'll have some extras to answer your questions. So yeah.
So all those questions, all of your questions about your children are going to determine the direction you need to take. And
yeah.
And there, the other issue too is that you have some of you have children that are very different, and you need to look at children individually, not just lump them together into one lump sum. Okay.
Yeah.
So the next thing you have to do is think about you. What kind
yes.
of teacher
yes.
are you? Where do your passions lie? Are you more science and math oriented? Are you language oriented? Are you organized or are you a free spirit? How much, and this is a huge question,
yeah,
how much time
is.
Do you realistically have to teach in a day?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we
that's
forget.
Very,
how
yes,
many children
exactly.
are in your family and how much are they going to need? If you have little bitties running around or you have little babies and you're trying to teach those kids, you've got to think about what am I choosing to teach these with these kids? How am I going to make it? Which I do another whole talk called multi-age, multi-grade.
We're going to do that in September. You're already on my schedule for that. So
because mom
yes.
find all kinds of things that she can do together as a family so that you're not segregating your kids at different cubbies and trying to teach them all separately.
Yeah, it'll drive you crazy.
Yes. Some of you think, I can't do this. You may not have an education degree. You may not be smart in math or science. You may not be a strong reader. Or you may be a lousy writer. Mom, just lay aside that fear. You can do this. You just
Amen.
Got to be honest with yourself. You need to know what your strengths and weaknesses are and what you reasonably can or can't do.
Right.
Personally, math and science are not my thing. Okay. Even though I have a nursing degree, science, I don't enjoy it. And math, I'm sixth grade, and that's about as far as I can go. I will not teach past sixth grade. It's not my strength. I just can't. And so I had to acknowledge that from the very first day that this is not something I could do. So I needed to find how am I going to get those holes filled. Fortunately, my husband is a science math, you know, guru, and so he could fill in the math hole. And our co-op was awesome for science, and so we were able to throw our kids in the co-op and get the science hole filled. So that was a win for us. I loved the reading, language arts, writing, history, Bible. So that's what I focused on. That was my strength.
Yeah.
And so that was where I, you know, poured my heart into.
Yeah, that's such good advice. State requirements, consider your kids, and then consider yourself. Too many moms leave that out, and that leads to burnout. So I love that you mentioned that. So now, what next?
Okay. What are you going to teach your kids? What are the subjects? If they're itty bitties, then what you need to teach them is very different than what they're than when they're in high school. Okay.
Yes.
So if they're in high school, your focus is on what they need to graduate. If they just want a standard diploma, then they need a certain amount of credits, and you need to look at that and you to know what is it that I have to teach them. If they're college bound, then they need more.
Right.
And then you got to go, okay, I'm thinking high school here. I've got the five philosophies. Some of the philosophies work well, some of them not so much, okay? Unschooling becomes much harder at the high school level. It really
it's a lot of tracking of time, and I did it for one child, so.
Wow.
But it is a lot. It's time consuming for tracking.
Classical is a great option for high school. If the child has that bent, traditional is a great option, or you can do a mixture of both of those. Unit studies is harder to do.
I did one child for that too. So yeah, it is possible.
Charlotte Mason is also possible in high school. And of course you can mulligan stew it. You can do a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Check out your state requirements for whether a child can start high school in eighth grade. And I'm not a big proponent of pushing your kids through. I did that and I regret it big time. I wish I hadn't.
That's good advice.
But
yeah.
Then the benefit of starting in eighth grade is that it gives you an extra year to add things in.
Yeah.
And then you can, you know, or you can slow down and you don't have to cover everything quite so fast. If you start in April,
Exactly.
please check out your state, because some states will only let you start high school in certain subjects. So you kind of need to know what you're doing there. Now, if
Right.
they're itty bitties, if they're little K to ones, the just starting out babies, you have two priorities, mama: reading and math. Those are the fundamentals. In the olden days, it was called reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Math and learning to read trump history. Now, I realize that I sell a history literature curriculum, so it might seem funny to say what I just said. So when I go to conventions and I have a lot of new moms and dads coming into my booth, and they've got the little itty bitties, and they've got the deer in the headlights look, and they're just like so overwhelmed. They don't know which direction they're going to take. When I see that look, and I say, what ages are your kids? And they say, my kindergarten or first grade. I just like set my books aside. So we're not going to look at this right now. Tell me what you're doing for reading, and tell me what you're doing for math. And it just, they kind of look at me like, you're okay. And I start talking about it, and we process. What are you doing? And then I'll send them to booths and say, go look at that booth, go look at that booth, go and focus them on reading and math. And I tell them that history is not priority. It's not.
Right, because we don't memorize things. As they get older, our kids just absorb that stuff anyways.
So many families, so many moms and dads with those little bitties are so grateful for the grace that gives them to just relax. And you don't have to do everything. You don't have to do science. You don't have to do history. You just do that reading, writing, and arithmetic, and let them go play outside. You don't have to buy a box. You don't have to jump right into the philosophies. You just start out slow. You're going to have all the rest of your life to do the rest of it. So that's kind of my thing. So math and reading are fundamental, and they're the foundations of everything else. If your child is not reading, then that should be priority.
So, and then as far as reading, what kind of advice do you have for that?
So I am a phonics mama. I taught school. I taught first grade for quite a number of years, and I've taught all my kids to read. And phonics is like, to me, it works. There are a lot of great ones out there. If you find a phonics curriculum you like, but it also has math and reading and history, you don't have to buy the whole box just to get that phonics curriculum.
That's good advice.
My attitude is, once your child masters the phonics, though, or once they master the ability to read, you don't have to stick with that program. Some people think, well, I've got this curriculum and I'm follow and I've done the kindergarten books and the first grade books and the second grade books, and my kid is tired of it, but do I need to keep going? No, because once they get that reading in, you can split them off and go, okay, now we don't have to stick with this specific reading program, because once they're reading, you're good to go. So we did phonics up until first, second gradish. It depended upon the child. My strongest readers allowed me to leave phonics faster than my struggling readers. And of course, you've got some kids that don't learn best by phonics, and I get that. And if you do, then find the program that works for them. Majority kids do better with phonics. I'm just biased that way. So if you love the Charlotte Mason and classical approach, and you're going, but I want to do the literature books with Charlotte Mason, I want to do the living books, you can. You use them as your as mom readers or as picture books, and you can do them alongside, but don't put away the phonics books or the learning to read along with that. Just bring them alongside you. And don't drown your child, don't do quite as many, but you still can.
Yeah, that's great advice, and yeah, just following what you have for when you need it, and then branching out. That's great. So that's reading. Now, what about math?
Okay, so with math, when I started out with my boys, there weren't a lot of options out there. Traditional math was pretty much the option. But now you have a lot of different options. Math needs to be determined, and this is really this I really believe this math needs to be determined by the specific child. You may have six children, but that all six children might not all learn the same.
Yeah.
I had one child who would have flourished doing Singapore math if I had known about it. I did not know about it. I wish I had. I had one child who would have loved and thrived doing Matthew C, because that was the kind of kid he was.
Right.
And, if I could have, I would have put them both in those two separate programs if I had had mm-hmm. that option back then. I had one child who worked best doing Saxon. In fact, my boys, my older boys, my littles, my 15-year-olds do Saxon, and they do really well with it. I had one child who completely bombed out of a DVD-based math program. It just did not work. So those are four very different math programs,
right.
Very different philosophies. And picking and choosing mm-hmm. is based on your individual child. If you're buying your books from a box and they're selling a math curriculum that does not fit your child's needs, get out of that box. Go find yeah. something that fits them.
Mm-hmm.
And if it means that you have three different kids in three different math programs, so be it.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of homeschooling.
Exactly.
Some moms go, well, I can't do that because I have to pass the books down and save money doing it. And I get that, mom.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if your child does not fit that program, then find something that fits them, because math is important. And teaching to the child's ability is so much better than cramming them into a book that doesn't work for them.
Yes, it is so true. And you can sell it. You can trade it with somebody else that homeschools. There's other options. we've got, you know, the reading and math, definitely fundamental. And then picking, you know, you went through the basics of all of these different methodologies, but how do you kind of get down to it and actually pick and choose?
So that requires some research.
Hmm.
You need to have some ideas of your philosophies, okay? Traditional unit studies, classical, Charlotte Mason, unschooling, free spirit.
Uh-huh.
You need to know which ones, where do you lean? Which way are you leaning?
Hmm.
And then where you have a direction you can head. Even if you just say, I want to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that,
uh-huh.
decide which road or roads you want to head down. But beware that there are pros and cons to each philosophy. So I just want to go
That's
through that.
That's good to know.
Quick.
Yes, please.
So for traditional is simple and easy and straightforward. It's just open the book and go. For high schoolers, it's a good option. Testing and grading is simple to do. It looks good on a transcript, but it's not going to fit that active child. It doesn't often take into account the learning styles of your particular child. It may be too dry. It may be too test focused, and especially
right.
if you're learning children with learning struggles or struggling learners and those kinds of kids, traditional sometimes really stumbles them up, especially if the focus is on testing.
Yeah.
And it may be too hard to do if you have multiple children doing multiple subjects.
Right.
Traditional
it is very
is really
labor
hard
intensive.
If you have five different, you know, kids that you're doing this history and you're doing this history and you're doing this history, makes it really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your pros and cons of traditional unit studies. They encourage creativity. They allow you to go in deep and immerse in subjects. They appeal
right.
to different learning styles. So those special needs learners really like learning unit studies.
Especially the ones that don't transition well. They like
yep.
stay on that focus for a long time.
Yep. They bring families together. But they sometimes leave holes or gaps in learning.
Yeah.
Students don't always know how to tie unit studies together. So if you're doing unit studies in history, they don't know how those pilgrims go with those, you know, with the Revolutionary War. It's just two separate subjects, and they don't know how to pull that together in a history chronology.
Right.
Unit studies can also be expensive,
mm-hmm.
and they can require a lot of parent planning.
Yes.
And it's also hard to determine exactly what's been learned in unit studies because a lot of them don't come with tests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's unit studies. Classical, it gets children learning and thinking critically. It encourages question asking and wrestling with beliefs and worldview. It takes into consideration the stages of development, your grammar stage, your logic stages, your middle schoolers, your rhetoric stage, your high schoolers. It's super strong in reading and history, and it's very language focused, but mm-hmm. the it can also be very intense and rigorous and focus on higher-minded learning. And it can burn kids out. And yeah. I've seen classical burn children out. Mm-hmm. You know, so you need to be careful with it. And I have a classical curriculum. And so, you know, I recognize that it can definitely burn. Mm. Charlotte Mason is built around family and family time. It's rich in literature and history and active learning. It encourages questioning and curiosity, but it tends to require a lot of parent planning. This is another one that you got to do a lot of mom work. It focuses on the arts over sciences and math, making it harder for college-bound students. Using only living books, which is the Charlotte Mason philosophy, means you may not be able to fill in the gaps in their learning. If you're just reading living books without some kind of spines to pull it together, it can leave gaps. And Charlotte Mason can also be a rather expensive way to go as you're pulling and piecing it all together.
Right. You end up with a huge library in your house.
Yes.
Or visiting the library every week.
Unschooling meets children where they are. It encourages play and active pursuit in areas of interest. It gives students a love for learning, but it assumes that all children pursue worthy areas of interest, and not necessarily do all kids pursue worthy areas of interest. I had one that did. I had one that if we followed him and all of his interests, if we had just unschooled him, he would have learned a tremendous amount. I had one that didn't. That wasn't his bent. So we would have just dropped off the cliff in terms of homeschooling. Unschooling can go overboard on child led if the child isn't leading in good directions. It requires a lot of parental planning to make teachable moments out of what the child is pursuing. So if you mulligans do it, you can pick and choose from the above, going with their strengths and weaknesses and working around them.
Yeah, that's so true. I love how you kind of pulled that together. It really, and it's every family is going to have a different taste as to what tastes good. So so I love that you combine that with Stu, because and all the little pieces don't have to be glamorous either. I mean, like you started out with that story, but when they come together, it's perfect. It's filling. It's everything that you need. So, you know, in thinking about your biblioplan, that the curriculum that you've developed off of, how do these different philosophies kind of come together in that?
Biblioplan was originally billed as a classical history and literature curriculum, so that's what we call it. That's what the original owners called it, and that's what we called it. It was based on the well-trained mind philosophy.
Okay.
But when we, you know, because of my personality, when we started writing it and adding in stuff, I tend to have more of a Charlotte Mason thought patterns.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to share her philosophy, even though I didn't even know it was out there.
Right.
Much of our material is built around the Charlotte Mason attitude: living books, hands-on, very short lessons, art, narration, child-focused writing.
Hmm.
But it's also built around unit studies. You get to immerse in cultures. You get to immerse in countries to your heart's delight. We do. Our craft book is just rich. Hmm. We have notebooking that you can do. So you can really go in deep. And we've designed our scope and sequence so that you are able to spend time, like you spend a unit in Egypt, you spend a unit in Rome. So though it's chronological, we did it in a way that allows you to immerse in a unit study kind of feel. It's also traditional. We have children can read the text, they can answer questions, they can take tests. So it is a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And that's kind of my personality, and that's kind of how we have designed and written the curriculum.
Right. So you basically have an eclectic curriculum.
Yeah. Yes.
That's awesome. So if you're feeling a little lost, maybe you want to check out Julia's site. And if you're listening, just because I know we turn this into a podcast as well, Julia's website again is Biblioplan. It's BIBLIOPLAN.net. So, and those links will be on the YouTube description, along with any other links that we talked about in this video, just so that how to get to those really quickly. And again, we're going to have a Q&A time at the end. So if you have questions for Julia, definitely put those in the feed right now and make sure that you have them ready to go so that when we wrap up with what she's sharing, that we can jump right into those. So I'm interested in to hear, what directions you went with your own children, as you, because this seems like it's been a progressive thing.
Yes. So with my two older ones especially, I leaned towards classical for history. Mm-hmm. I wanted history and geography and Bible to be the absolute center of our schooling. That was the best part of our day.
Mm.
I wanted the kids to see history unfold. I wanted them to see God's story unfold. I wanted them to be able to think critically.
Mm.
I wanted them to wrestle with what they believed. I wanted them to love history, and that meant I wanted to immerse them in living books.
Hmm.
And I did. I tended to overdrown them. I did too many, honestly. But the living books was both classical and Charlotte Mason. I wanted their books to tie into the history that they were reading. Because I wanted them to make connections so that it would sink in and they would retain it. And I felt like that's the best way to retain it.
Yeah.
I also wanted them to immerse in cultures. And so we did the unit studies. I loved geography. Geography is like one of my favorite things.
Mm.
We did a tremendous amount of that. As part of our history, we did a lot of hands-on activities. We did cultural food, games, all of that stuff.
Fun.
For science, we did unit studies until they hit eighth grade, and then they had to do the serious, high school level science.
Right.
But up until then, we did unit studies, and I was really grateful that our co-op was unit study focused with science too, so we were able to do that. Biblioplan, our curriculum doesn't cover grammar, spelling, and vocabulary. I tend to choose to go in the traditional direction for all of those. I wanted my kids to learn a language, and so I kind of did that little bit of this and a little bit of that and tried this and ran into walls and everything.
We did the same thing.
I ended up, my favorite was a classical-based language that we did that was in upper elementary and middle school. That was probably my favorite one that we did, but language, I was all over the place.
Yeah.
So,
I never found anything for my older two that really worked, but my younger one, she's had a private tutor, and they are each other's best friends, and that has worked, and it's fortunately been rather economical for me because she was a homeschooled student and she doesn't charge me a lot. She even lived in Japan for a year teaching English and taught my daughter French from Japan. So so that is... When you get that type of arrangement, you don't let it go. But language is really difficult, I have to agree. So what about finding curriculum? I know we have them listed on our website. We have partners, and you are one of our partners listed on our website. But where else can families go? Because I know there's a lot of free stuff out there too, and a lot of really good written curriculum like yours.
Yeah. Googling, internet searches. If you or Google Charlotte Mason, you're going to come up with a whole bunch of options. Classical, you are. One good place to go is to go to Kathy Duffy's reviews.
Yes.
Kathy Duffy is does reviews of curriculum, and she's just phenomenal. Some of her reviews are the best. I consider the best because she doesn't get paid for her reviews, so they tend to be very honest. Convention halls, if you can go to a convention, go.
I'm hoping they're starting this year again.
Keeping people away, which is really sad because it is the best way to get your hands on it.
Right.
Another good way is to go on Facebook and go into forums. There are tons of homeschooling groups out there on Facebook. You can join curriculum-specific groups. Our curriculum has a Facebook group called Biblioplan Users. We get a lot of people who join just because they want to know about the curriculum, so they join to ask questions.
Right.
That's a really great way to find out about stuff. So you can go on and say, hey, what's the best math program? And people will jump right in and tell you what their ideas are. Word of mouth is probably the biggest and most important way to learn about curriculum. It's our biggest source of advertisement. It was the biggest way I learned about the material I ended up using. So here's my thing, though. If you hear something positive about a curriculum, then by all means, check it out. It may not fit your style, and that's okay, but kind words spoken over it, they're worth hearing. But here's my other word of caution. If someone gives you negative words about a curriculum, as someone who's been around the block, sometimes people are harsh towards a curriculum because they didn't like the cover or they didn't fully understand it. Sometimes people are harsh because they are biased towards their own box and they want to use their box. Sometimes they're harsh because it doesn't fit their philosophy. Sometimes they're harsh because it didn't fit work for them. Don't always assume that that's a reason to just throw that curriculum out the door or not even give it a time of day. If you're interested in something and your friend blows it off, don't just take their word for it. Take the time and honor the writers of that curriculum by giving them your time and effort. Most of the vendors that are out there, especially all of us little mom and pop vendors, we're working our hearts out. Look at what we've got. There's so many, I'm friends with so many of the vendors out there and I know their hearts, and just give them the time of day and say, hey, show me what you've got, or go on their website and look at it. I've seen too many people pass a curriculum that would work for them because their friends swayed them in the other direction. Don't be a lemming. Just, you know, think it out yourself. Word of mouth is powerful. It can sway you. If it's positive, that's wonderful. If it's negative, sift and ponder. We are way less discerning if something negative has been spoken over something. So a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You can pick and choose. Don't be overwhelmed. Focus on what's the most important. And have fun.
You have to have fun. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be a drudgery for everyone in the house. You know, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Right. And it's okay to say that this didn't work. I said stuff didn't work. I threw stuff out halfway through the year, says this is not working. And boom, out it went, you know, sell it on eBay.
And we're going to be actually starting reviews on our website. We're going to be doing unboxings, and we're doing a standard form so that you'll be able to know if it works for struggling learners and if, you know, as far as executive functioning and all these other things. So we're taking into consideration a lot of things that our parents would, just because they can't get their hands on materials. So our first review should come out sometime next month. We've just got some for our team, and we're going to be rounding up a review crew. So if that interests you in our audience to get some curriculum and do that, that may be something to think about as well. So we've got a couple questions. I'm going to pick and choose because we've got only about 7 minutes left. So hello, everybody watching. Looks like most people are on YouTube. So Michelle asked, I have a 6 and 8 year old in full-time ABA, so that's applied behavior therapy, and I'm having trouble figuring out expectations for homeschooling because that's mostly functional skills versus, and I know you've got kids that are struggle too, so you probably understand a little bit of that, but where to start, you know, especially at those ages. I mean, when you talk about reading and math, how should she approach that?
Just simple. Go just reading, especially if you have an eight. I wish I could ask.
Well, you can ask and see if she responds, because I mean, she just put that question up, so
I don't see the question. So
okay. Yeah, that just came up a couple minutes ago.
I'm not sure how to get them up. I would just go really simple. I would just focus again on your reading and math, and start there, and then go from there. So because I would also make, like with your 6 and 8 year old, I would try to find things that are as close that you can do as much together as you can, because that'll relieve some of the stress. So if you do pick science, do something that's just easy that you can do together. You're doing, you know, if you can do anything together, that makes it easier. But I would just definitely be focused on my little cat has decided to join me. Pop him off the chair. Focus on the reading and the math.
Yeah. I think we do get so stressed, and you know, as those things come in that that life skills that you just feel like need to be taught, you teach them and you
Yep.
focus on those main ones. I used to say the things that agitated me the most about my kids was the character lessons we needed to focus on that week.
And having fun. They're little. Just have fun. If you only teach for a couple hours, if you get that, and then just
So
the rest of
true.
the day, do a lot of play, do a lot of creative stuff. Just have fun.
Yeah, so true. I had one other question, and this may wrap up our time, but she asked if there were any recommendations, books written by authors of color, preferably without deeply embedded Christian themes, but I mean, feel free to share what you want to share, whether it has a Christian theme or not.
So that's kind of a hard question. Okay, can I say the
Yeah.
question again?
Oh, sure.
A lot of it depends upon your age. BiblioPlan is a literature curriculum. I mean, it's history literature, and we have like hundreds of books on our book list, hundreds. And I don't know how many of my authors are. I have a lot of authors that are multiracial, but I couldn't tell you how many. I would venture to say that, a lot of our books are Christian based, but a lot of our books are not. So it's kind of all over the place. We try to find a wide variety.
Right.
So it we are both history literature, so you're gonna get lots of options. Every week you have about three or four options of books per age range. So that's a lot of books.
Yeah.
But I don't have any specific authors that I can pull off the top of my head at this point.
Right. No, it's getting late for you.
Yeah.
And and what you said at the beginning too about saying, when you gravitate towards these different curriculums, you're going to gravitate towards things that go with your own, worldviews and all these other things. So you're going to be pulling from things that you've collected in your house or that you're looking at that will make an eclectic mix kind of in the direction of your own teaching philosophy and all those other things. So I love when you said that kind of towards the beginning of when we were talking and wanted to just reiterate that because I think that's important.
But our book lists are very diverse. We have a tremendous amount of books that are very that cover cultural
Right, and especially if
alterations.
you're doing geography and other things like that, you have to. So, yeah.
I mean, we look for them. So if we can find books that are multicultural, that are other races and stuff like that, as we stick it in, we stick
Yeah,
everything in.
that's
So.
awesome. Yeah, again, if you want to find out more about BiblioPlan and the Julia's and her husband's curriculum, you can check out her website at biblioplan.net. And just want to thank you, Julia. This has been wonderful. I've never heard anybody so concisely put together. This is what you have to think through. This is how all the approaches, their pluses, their minuses, what you can take out of it to make it fit. This is great.
Thank you.
So I appreciate all that you had to share. And I am looking forward to you coming back in September because we are going to talk about multi-age teaching. So that is on the schedule. So if you don't know, on our website, we do have a whole broadcast schedule. I just added all the February broadcasts, except for one. I'm still working on that. But we're going to focus on IEPs or individual education plans or student education plans. How do you do that? How do you write them? What do you do if you're emergency homeschooling and you want to get back to the IEP at school at some point? Hopefully when COVID stuff is over. Anyways, we're going to focus on a lot of that stuff. But next week, we're going to finish up teaching methodologies and we're going to talk about teaching a struggling learner using a literature-rich curriculum. And
Cool.
so yeah, and my guest is one of our past team members who has kids with dyslexia and uses a literature-based curriculum. So she's going to have a lot to share with how do you teach children who don't read well with books? So that should be a lot of fun. But anyways, so thank you again, Julia. I
You're welcome.
appreciated
I
your
enjoyed being
time,
here.
your wisdom, and it was wonderful having you. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you again right here next week on Empowering Homeschool Conversations, same time. same place. So we'll see you then. Have an awesome week, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.